I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. If you're thinking about it, chances are we're talking about it on WHYY's Radio Times.
Support for this NPR station podcast comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.
Good morning. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Welcome to Radio Times. Yesterday, Speaker of the House Dennis Hastert took responsibility for his handling of the controversy involving Representative Mark Foley, Republican of Florida. Foley had resigned after sexually suggestive emails and instant messages he had sent to teenage pages who worked in the U.S. House program came to light. Hastert's handling of the charges against Foley was criticized by both Republicans and Democrats. He was reportedly told several times about Foley's inappropriate behavior. The conservative Washington Times has called for Hastert's resignation. President Bush said he supported the speaker. Yesterday, the bipartisan House Ethics Committee opened an investigation into the scandal and said it would issue dozens of subpoenas for both witnesses and documents. This is all happening just about 1 month before the midterm elections, when Democrats and Republicans are in a fight over control of the House and the Senate. We want to talk about all of this today on Radio Times with our two guests, both of whom join us by telephone. Susan Milligan is the national political correspondent in the Washington Bureau of the Boston Globe, and she's been covering the Hill on and off since 1984. And Susan Milligan, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me back.
You're welcome. Also with us, A.B. Stoddard. She's an associate editor for the Hill newspaper, which covers the U.S. House and Senate. She was a reporter for the Hill from 1996 to 1999. Previously, she was a contributing editor to Congressional Quarterly, and she was also a former ABC News producer where she covered the U.S. Senate. A.B. Stoddard, nice to have you with us as well. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Susan Milligan, let me begin with you. Is there pressure, or how much pressure is there on Speaker Dennis Hastert to step down?
Well, the most notable development in this was when the Washington Times, which is a conservative newspaper and considered sort of an arbiter of conservative opinion, had an editorial a couple of days ago saying that the speaker should step down over this. A couple of conservatives have sort of suggested that or have come out against Mr. Hastert. Notably, the Republican leadership kind of rallied around him yesterday, you know, trying to knock down any suggestions that they were not with the speaker. But in a situation like this, I mean, no member of Congress is going to out and out call for him to step down immediately unless he's basically already gone. And you're already starting to see some rumblings. Congressman Jeb Bradley, who's a Republican from New Hampshire, all week I've been sort of asking him, you know, whether the speaker should step down. And he's been saying, well, if there's been any misconduct, anyone's found guilty of misconduct, they should step down, which doesn't really mean anything. I mean, that's just the rules of the House. But
Sure. Yesterday
he put out a statement saying that if it indeed is true that Speaker Foley knew about this in advance and you know, didn't do anything about it, then he should resign, which is a pretty strong statement from a rank-and-file member. Of course, the speaker has a great deal of control over the quality of life of the individual members.
To you, A.B. Stoddard, the same kind of question. Do you think Dennis Hastert's days are numbered as Speaker of the House?
I think that the turn they took yesterday was probably wise. They did it because they the decision to sort of bring in the political National Guard, having members of the administration defend Speaker Hastert, and having the rank and file and the members of the leadership, like Majority Leader John Boehner, come out with statements in support of the speaker was probably, it's hard to call it a wise move. It's probably the best move they could have made given the circumstances. What they're trying to do now is stop the bleeding, because they made a calculation that dumping Hastert in the remaining weeks before the midterm elections was just too much of a, it was just going to be an automatic victory for the Democrats, and that finding a new speaker in the next couple of weeks would create a fresh wound and therefore more blood. So they're in a terrible situation. Hastert is ultimately responsible for not having stopped the Mark Foley scandal, and that is because whether his staff dealt with it and didn't tell him, or he knew of it and forgot the conversations, or just didn't deal with it at the time. Dennis Hassert is a good man, and I don't think he ever meant to do anything wrong, but the responsibility lies upon his shoulders. So he has opened himself up to this criticism. Even if he remains Speaker, the criticism among the rank and file will continue because it must. The reason it must is because they are in so much political trouble already. And timing is everything in life. Timing is everything in politics. This is a terrible year for the Republicans. It has been month in, month out, across the spectrum of policy issues. And now a sex scandal on top of it has made them especially vulnerable and Speaker Hassert especially vulnerable. They must continue to criticize him and continue to call for resignations in case evidence of a real cover-up surfaces, blah, 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 because they must. They must tell the voters that they won't stand for this and that they want a clean house. So even as they stand by Speaker Hassert, it's incumbent upon them, as vulnerable incumbents, to continue this rallying cry of we won't put up with scandals and we won't harbor scandals in our ranks.
Well, let me ask you, Susan Milligan, what you make of the comments that Dennis Hastert told the Chicago Tribune, and I'm quoting here just a couple of sentences. The people who want to see this thing blow up are ABC News and a lot of Democratic operatives, people funded by George Soros. Who's he talking to there?
He's trying to, he's basically trying to appease his base because, I mean, this is giving the Republicans a lot of problems with their base because it's not a sex scandal. I mean, it's not somebody having an affair with another adult. This has to do with the protection of underage teenagers who are, you know, supposed to be under the protection of the Congress. I mean, they're in loco parentis. They're supposed to be looking out for the pages. And they've been trying to make family values and character an issue in a number of campaigns, less so this year than in 2004. But that's always been, a theme of the Republican campaigns. So he's just trying to kind of stop the bleeding, as my colleague just said. They've got to get their base out or they're not going to hang on to the House. There's just no question about that. They've got to get their base out. But a lot of the base is upset. Now, I just have to say, though, that the idea that you blame, that this is some kind of conspiracy between ABC and the Democrats is, it looks a little bit desperate. I mean, even if you could buy into that theory, it still doesn't answer how it was that they knew at least of these initial messages last year and didn't do anything about it. No, I agree. I don't think that the speaker knew about the very sexually explicit message, and I can't imagine that he would have not done something. I don't think anybody believes that. But, you know, there are some questions about why they didn't pursue this more aggressively. They didn't discuss it with any Democrats last year, not on the Ethics Committee and not even on the page board, not even with the ranking Democrat, Dale Kildee, who is widely acknowledged to be about the least partisan person you could ever meet on Capitol Hill. So it just doesn't look good in retrospect. It looks like maybe they were more concerned about the political fallout than they were about really getting it to the bottom of what was going on.
But did they not share it, Susan Milligan, because of just how highly partisan Congress is and the House?
I mean, they've been saying, look, we knew there were inappropriate, over-friendly emails, but, you know, it didn't rise to the level of anything, you know, that appeared to be sort of predatory or sexual harassment or whatever. And you know, they have a point there. But the question is more, why didn't they? I mean, the kid, you know, he himself described them as sick, sick, sick. So if the kid was that uncomfortable, why not pursue it? Now, Speaker Hassert said yesterday, and others have said, that the parents asked that they not do an investigation or didn't think an investigation was warranted. But, you know, that doesn't have anything to do with anything. It's the job of Congress to police its own members, and the standard there is different. It's not – they don't investigate something only if there's criminal behavior involved. They investigate something if it, you know, would violate the rules of the House. There is a totally different standard there than there would be in a criminal proceeding.
To you, A.B. Stoddard, this is not the first time that this program has come under some kind of scrutiny. Actually, back in 1983, there was a congressional investigation found that two members of the House, Republican Daniel Crane and Democrat Jerry Studs, had actually had sexual relationships with pages, one a female and one a male. Is there some problem with this page program?
Well, at the time, they decided after that scandal, I believe those pages were were 17, but they did decide at that point to raise the age, the minimum age requirement, from 14 to 16. And that's really all that came out of any kind of reforms from the scandals in 1983. There is an age-old problem with heterosexual men leering at young girls and homosexual men doing the same with young boys. It's it actually happens in schools. And it happened in the church, and it happens everywhere. So if that is understood, it is the responsibility of Congress, as Susan mentioned, to not only follow the laws of the land, but to hold the House to a very high standard and follow its own rules. For conduct, the PAGE program could have probably been tightened, a lot more to prevent this. But the interesting thing about what Mark Foley did was, I think he was able for many years to sort of, his behavior was able, it went undetected for the following reasons. He did a lot of this fraternizing actually just in the halls of Congress and the places where the pages were supposed to be doing their jobs. So he was super friendly, and a lot of the pages thought that was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
The others, who were pursued more aggressively, were made to feel uncomfortable, and we're learning that now. Then he would make contact with them, obviously, after they left the program and when they went home to their home states. It's still wildly inappropriate, and we can see why some of the pages engaged in some back and forth with him, because they hoped to get a job. They hoped to return to Washington, and they thought they were making a political, career connection. And I am not an expert on the PAGE board. I think that it sort of stands to reason that this sometimes teenagers and adults are a toxic mix when it comes to, sexual misconduct. So yes, they have some good curfew rules. They are protected in a dorm of their own, et cetera. But a lot of this fraternizing and flirting, if you will, is going on in the course of their job, the things they're supposed to do, bring you a telephone message, that kind of thing.
And to you, Susan Milligan, and we're just about a minute away from our first break here, but do you think the House Ethics Committee can put politics aside and do a serious investigation of Foley in this program?
Well, I hope so. The four members of the committee who talked to us yesterday said they were absolutely committed to it. And Judy Biggert, who's a Republican from Illinois, actually used the term cover-up in describing what they were looking into. So, everybody's disgusted by this. So, when it comes to kids, and this is the Republicans, right? When it comes to kids, this is not a partisan issue.
But this is a House Ethics Committee that's got a pretty spotty track record.
Yeah, it does. But, I just think that this issue, as opposed to a political corruption issue, is one that they're more likely to be bipartisan on. We'll see. But they seem committed to it, and, we'll see what happens. I just think it's interesting that they're talking about overhauling the PAGE program like it's the PAGE's fault. Harold Meyerson had an interesting idea in the Washington Post the other day. He said, maybe we should just build a 700-foot fence around Congress, it's not the PAGE's fault. It's Congress that needs to work on its behavior here. That's why I just think all these, the ideas of, we have to reform the PAGE program. They already did do things. They did other things after the 80s, after Gary Studs and Dan Crane. They put they used to live in apartments, and now they're in a sort of dormitory, and they're incredibly controlled. I've talked to some of the PAGEs, and it's amazing what they do. They're up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and they have to go to school at the Library of Congress. They're not allowed to use the Internet in their rooms.
And I got to jump in here only because we're up on a break here. That's Susan Milligan, also with us, A.B. Stoddard. We'll be right back.
Penn supports WHYY. Doctors at Penn's Depression Research Unit are providing evaluations to determine if you are suffering from depression. Symptoms may include mood swings, irritability, sleep disturbance, and lack of interest. Those who qualify may receive an initial examination and treatment with an investigational antidepressant for 3 to 12 months. For information, the DRU number at Penn is 215-662-3462. 215-662-3462. Hi, this is Ed Cunningham. If you love great classical music the way I do, I hope you'll join us every Sunday night for Showcase here on 91 FM. We feature some of the Delaware Valley's most talented musicians in concert, performing the world's greatest chamber, vocal, and orchestral music. That's Showcase every Sunday night at 8, here on WHYY 91 FM.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Single-sex public schools. Advocates say boys and girls learn differently and should be separated. Also, the latest from Capitol Hill. That's Public Radio's daily digest of news and culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. It's just about a month until the midterm elections. There are some tough races across the country as each party, the Republican and Democratic Party, work to control the U.S. House of Representatives and or the U.S. Senate. There are some key races here in Pennsylvania and New Jersey and in many other states. The Foley scandal could sway voters or keep them away. Meanwhile, President Bush is traveling the country talking about the threat of terrorism. We're talking about these issues with our guest, A.B. Stoddard. She's an associate editor for The Hill newspaper, which covers the U.S. House and Senate, and Susan Milligan, national political correspondent in the Washington Bureau of the Boston Globe. If you've been following the Foley scandal, what do you make of it? Give us a call here on Radio Times at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. To you, A.B. Stoddard, are there some specific races you think that are going to be hurt by this Foley scandal?
Well, it would be hard for me to choose specific races. I would say that in the battleground states and in the battleground districts that they're worried about, this would be Connecticut, mm-hmm. Pennsylvania, Indiana, it's going to be hard to make it over the finishing line for Republicans who have vulnerable incumbents running for re-election if they don't get out the faithful. And by that, I mean, you know, their best Republican supporters. Often they are evangelicals. The volunteers in the final days of the campaign for Republicans who turn the vote out are often Christian conservative activists. They canvass the community, the churches, and they get people to help get out the right voters. These people are upset about this, and both the volunteers who would be getting the vote out and the voters. And so this is going to have a profound effect on the numbers. I just can't tell you exactly where, right, but they are fighting for a number of seats, 15 seats, and across those contested, in each cycle, it's interesting. We have fewer and fewer contested seats. I mean, the incumbent retention business has been so perfected that the number of races where the two parties can vie for control, it just gets smaller and smaller. But right now, we're looking at a number in the teens, and they will no doubt, no matter what state they're in, the numbers will be affected by this scandal because, as I said in my answer previously, the voters from independent to Democrat, from sort of moderate Republican all the way to the very most right wing of the party, everyone is disillusioned about something, be it Iraq, immigration policy, many, many, many issues. And so it's going to be a really tough, it was going to be very tough for the Republicans anyway, but they were probably going to hold it. This could just tip the balance for them.
And to you, Susan Milligan, A.B. Stoddard was talking about incumbency, and I guess redistricting has allowed incumbents to really retain power. Are there some specific races that you think are vulnerable because of not just this Foley scandal, but as A.B. Stoddard said, Iraq policy and some other domestic policies as well?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, I think that this, it wasn't going well for the Republicans anyway. way. It's just not been their year, and Bush is so unpopular. And it's a midterm election, so you don't have a presidential campaign turning out the vote. Although the Republicans have long had a very strong get-out-the-vote effort, and the Democrats have really been hindered in the past 5 or 7 years by the demise of organized labor, which was a big part of their get-out-the-vote effort. But in this case, I mean, I think the Foley seat itself is going to be very hard for them to hang on to. But I'm also thinking of the Tom Reynolds seat. And, I'm from that district, actually. My family lives up there still.
And that's in New York, we should say.
Yeah, in upstate New York. I'm a Buffalonian. And I was up in the Big Nickel. Actually, last Thanksgiving, I was starting to pick up that Reynolds was in a little bit of trouble because Western New York is, the sort of Reagan Democrats, a lot of them, especially in his district. But the economy's not been going well. And he's been chairman. This is his second term as chairman of the National Republican Campaign Committee. And I think there was a little sense up there that he was sort of asleep at the switch and paying more attention to other people's districts than his own. And I was picking up that he was in a little bit of trouble, but not a lot. And the Democrat running against him is not a terribly sophisticated candidate, Jack Davis. He's self-financed. He's a wealthy industrialist. He's a former Republican. And he's had a single campaign issue or single issue campaign of jobs, which sounds a little bit facile, but actually in Western New York can really work because that's really all that matters up there. And so the race was already tightening up because of that, and now this has just really put Reynolds on the hot seat because he there's been this question about what he knew. He said he's told the Speaker's office about it last year. The Speaker's office then said, well, I don't remember the conversation, but I'm not disputing it. Of course, it was Mr. Reynolds' aide, Kirk Fordham, who recently, who just this week had a step down over this. He had also worked for Mr. Foley, and now he's saying that he told the staff in the Speaker's office, a couple of years ago about some questionable behavior. And Reynolds has just been getting hammered in the local media and the talk radio up there. And I was just reading something in the Buffalo News this morning that this video of Reynolds appearing with all of these children at a press conference a couple of nights ago has actually been viewed more than 14,000 times on YouTube. I mean, it's just been he's really getting beaten up there. So I think he's got a really tough race.
And a more self-serving question here. How about the races around Philadelphia? Do you think a similar kind of thing could play out here, Susan?
Well, I mean, I think that those races have just, they've been close for a while. And anything like this, it just sort of raises questions about the Republican leadership and feeds the Democratic line that these are the guys who have been in charge for, 12 years in the House. And, this is how they behave. And do you want someone who's going to vote for Denny Hastert for Speaker? Do you want someone who's going to vote for change? I mean, it just helps them a little bit. And again, it depresses the turnout. The other thing is, especially in upstate New York, it's not just Reynolds. There are probably 5 seats in upstate New York there that are conceivably in play. And what works against Republicans is that the 3 top ticket races, the governorship, the U.S. Senate, and the attorney general, they're just done. I mean, the Democrats are way, way, way ahead. So basically, guys like Tom Reynolds are going to have to convince their base to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and go out and vote for them because, Spitzer's done, Clinton's done, Andrew Cuomo's done. I mean, those races are decided.
And I do want to get to some callers. Just a quick question to you, A.B. Stoddard. I don't mean this as a quick question, actually, because it's a serious one. While all this controversy and conversation about the Foley scandal has been going on, more than 20 American troops have been killed in Iraq, and that would be since last weekend. And I just wonder whether, as you had mentioned earlier, A.B. Stoddard, that Iraq is an important issue for voters.
The entire year has been the most important issue. It is the absolute 600-pound gorilla in this election until this Mark Foley thing happened a week ago. And I cannot believe that the administration is as worried as they are over the fallout of the Mark Foley scandal. I bet they're just tickled they don't have to be defending themselves against Bob Woodward's book, as they expected to be doing all week. The Iraq vote, I believe, is a decided vote. And by that, I mean that I think several months ago, the voters who are angry about Iraq made the decision that they've had enough and that there was not going to be any more elections and purple fingers that were going to make them happy about the outcome there, that it continues to disintegrate and that they want a change in Iraq policy. I think those voters might be listening to the Mark Foley scandal, but I think they're still upset about Iraq. I think they're still focused on it. And I think that what we're going to see here is there's sort of a number of persuadable voters versus a number of decided voters. There are persuadable voters the Bush administration went after the entire month of September, every day before the anniversary of September 11th and all the weeks following, talking up security, terrorist pockets in Afghanistan, the threat, the hornet's nest of Pakistan, the dangers everywhere. What they were doing was changing the subject away from Iraq to the larger threat of terrorism around the globe. There are some voters, and they exist probably already in their camp, but who do link Iraq and the larger global war on terror, and those voters, I believe there's a number of them that are persuadable. I believe the number is probably not that large. But those voters were people they were trying to convince to stop thinking about Iraq and sort of scare, actually, about, you know, the need to continue the fight, et cetera. But I believe, and I have all year, that the Iraq vote is decided, and we're not going to know how big it is until after November 7th.
And that's A.B. Stoddard, associate editor for The Hill newspaper. It's a newspaper that covers the U.S. House and Senate, and she was a reporter for The Hill from 1996 to 1999. Also joining us by telephone today, Susan Milligan. She's a national political correspondent in the Washington Bureau of the Boston Globe, and she's been covering The Hill on and off since 1984. And we invited both of them to join us to talk about national politics. We've been talking about the Foley fallout, but certainly Iraq and a whole host of domestic issues are very important to voters this campaign season. Just one or two open lines at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me get Ken from Lansdale to join us. Ken, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Marty. One of your guests touched on my question, which is, hasn't Mark Foley done the White House a favor? Number one, this has created a diversion from the Woodward book. And number two, if the Republicans lose the House in November, the White House can say it was because of Mark Foley and not because of the president and his policies. I'll listen to your comments off the air.
It's a good question. Ken, A.B. Stoddard, that was something that you had mentioned. Do you agree with Ken?
While I think that it was a lucky break for them in some ways, they are desperate to hold on to the House for the following reason. There has been no oversight. Inadequate oversight of the Iraq war since it began in the Congress, which is run by the Republican Party, in the House and the Senate. The Democrats, if they control the House even by one vote, have the ability to hold hearings after hearing, issue subpoenas, and begin a thorough examination of the Iraq war. The Scooter Libby trial will begin next year and will be based upon discrepancies in the intelligence leading up to the Iraq war and the political fight around that and the manipulations and the machinations around that question. In addition, the presidential races really are going to begin, in the Democratic and Republican parties just days after this election. So it's going to be very, very tough for George Bush in his last 2 years, in his lame duck period of his presidency, to deal with a Democrat. It'll be tough for him dealing with a Republican Congress. It'll be tough for him to get any oxygen. But if he loses the House, it's going to be terrible for him.
And to you, Susan Milligan, and then I do want to get back to our callers, just how damning is Bob Woodward's book? He's not the first to write about problems within the administration, to question Bush's knowledge and seriousness, to question Rumsfeld's handling of the war, some of these public pronouncements, questions about misleading the American people. But because he's Bob Woodward, does it have more resonance in Washington?
Well, I mean, in Washington, it probably does. I'm not sure outside of Washington, but it's not good for them. I mean, it's put them on the defensive, and they've had to go on all the Sunday shows, and they've kind of come back at the book and trying to take it apart. Of course, they weren't doing that when Woodward was writing books that were actually somewhat flattering in some ways to the White House. But it's just not good. And I don't, as for the Foley scandal distracting from that, the Foley scandal isn't doing them any favors. It's just one more thing. I mean, I don't think people forget about Iraq just because of because of Foley. I think it's just one more thing, and it's distracting them from defending themselves against Iraq, and it's distracting them from trying to push a national security message, which is really the only message that works for them now, and I don't think it works for them as well as it used to.
Let me get to Vanessa from Berwyn to join us. Hi, Vanessa. Go ahead. You're in Radio Times.
Hi. Hi there. I found myself not just sure about who I'm going to vote for this election, but being motivated to actually work for a campaign during my spare time because of not so much the Iraq War, which is a very important issue for me, but because I'm so concerned about domestic issues. And we have a candidate in the 7th District that's not just strong on his view on Iraq, but on how to help us domestically. And I'm wondering... do your guests feel that domestic issues are sort of in play at all? I mean, are voters, am I alone? Are voters concerned about domestic issues? It seems to me that we're in trouble all over the place in terms of the deficit and health care and education, and I could just go on and on.
Well, I'm glad you gave us a list because domestic issues cover a whole host of issues.
Right.
but let me just briefly get a response first from you, Susan Milligan, and then from you, A.B. Stoddard. Do some of these domestic issues that Vanessa talks about have resonance with the American public?
Sure, absolutely. Susan? I mean, you know, in some places it's, you know, senior citizens who are hitting this donut hole in the new, you know, Medicare prescription drug coverage plan. And as I said, in upstate New York and in western New York, Iraq isn't even really that much of an issue in the Reynolds-Davis race. It's the economy and jobs, because that's the issue up there.
What do you think, A.B. Stoddard?
I think absolutely. I think that the average American voter looks at the Congress, hears that the two parties fighting back and forth about stay the course, cut and run over Iraq all year long, fighting off corruption scandals, the Democrats trying to tell us that the Republicans have built a culture of corruption, the Republicans trying to defend themselves against several continuing, I mean, one after another, corruption scandals this year, and of course now this thing with Mark Foley, and I think really, the average voter is sitting there thinking, all I want to know is when the border is going to be secured, when you're going to reform Social Security, when you're going to figure out health care, and when you're going to do something about energy policy so that we're not dependent on foreign oil and my gas doesn't cost this much. I think it is absolutely bewildering to the sort of the voter who doesn't follow politics as a sport and is just trying to live their life out there and watching the results that have not been coming out of Congress in the last 2 years in the 109th. And I think that those are the issues they care about. Of course they care about the Iraq War, but I think that in their daily lives, as housing markets cool in 28 states and consumer confidence is down, one more press release from the White House telling them that, you know, job growth is great is not making them feel great. I think in all these domestic issues are the most important to them.
And to you, Susan Milligan, again, we're about a minute away from our second break, but the Democrats, of course, the minority party in Congress, but is there guilt by association that you think the American public feels about Congress in general from both parties?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, this was the Democrats' problem in 1994. They'd gotten a little drunk with their own power, a little bit arrogant, and that was one of the reasons the electorate threw them out. And we had some real surprises. The Speaker lost his job that year, Tom Foley. So I think that that's part of what's happening now, too. I mean, we've had one-party rule for a while, and the Republicans have controlled the House for 12 years, and they've gotten a little used to being in charge and you know, maybe if you know, people have seen them being a little arrogant. So, but, you know, then again, I could see them pulling it out. I mean, it really, you know, the Speaker's right. It does come down to individual races. And, you know, they could definitely pull it out. It's going to be very close.
And that's Susan Milligan, who joins us along with A.B. Stoddard. And we're talking about national politics. We're talking about various charges and allegations involving representative from Florida named Foley, who was sending sexually suggestive emails to pages. That, of course, has come under scrutiny. He has left the Congress. We're talking about the kind of fallout from that scandal, whether whether it will affect particular races, and talking about some of the issues that Americans care about, whether domestic politics or foreign policy. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Susan Milligan, national political correspondent for the Washington Bureau of the Boston Globe, A.B. Stoddard, associate editor for The Hill newspaper. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, the Wilma Theater presents The Pillow Man by Martin McDonagh. The Pillow Man is the twistedly comic tale of a writer who is interrogated about murders echoing his unpublished stories. As his haunting tale comes to life, he must fight to protect his work against censorship. The Pillow Man has a 5-week limited engagement at the Wilma Theater from October 4th through November 5th. For tickets, 215-546-7824 or online at wilmatheater.org.
In honor of Steve Reich's 70th birthday, there's a new box set of his recordings and a month of dance and music performances in and around New York. On the next Fresh Air, a musical retrospective with Steve Reich. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 here on WHYY 91 FM.
Next time on Day to Day.
Kentucky's Keeneland Racecourse is replacing its traditional dirt track with a new synthetic surface.
It could be safer for horses.
But the jockeys will have to work harder.
Usually you can hear a horse coming behind you. And when you do, you can ask him to run and go on. But on the poly track, you can't hear that. You can't hear a horse coming.
Trotting out new turf in bluegrass country.
Next time on Day to Day.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Let's get back to our callers, and we've got Tim, who joins us from Atlanta. Tim, go ahead, you're Radio Times.
Yeah, hi, wanted to talk about that this pension plan, Foley's pension plan, and this war chest that they get. Do they get to keep this money that they accrue while they're in Congress? And I'll take my answer off the air, thanks.
Tim, thanks for calling into Radio Times. You know the answer to that, A.B. Stoddard.
I think there's some question right now about what they're going to do with Poli's pension plan. As far as I know, when you resign in disgrace, the campaign funds that you've already raised are yours to dole out to other candidates, future presidential candidates. I know when Senator Torricelli left in 2002, I believe it was, he left with a whole bunch of money and... And though he left, you know, in disgrace, sort of suddenly resigned, his friends were asking him, you know, for that money. I think the pension thing is the question that has to be resolved, and I'm not sure it's been resolved yet. I think some members are appealing to the leadership to take it away.
And I noticed, Susan Milligan, that Mark Foley, when he was in Congress, was very generous with his money. Where did he get all that money?
Well, he was a good fundraiser, and you know some are better at it than others. And you certainly endear yourself to other members of Congress when you raise money for other candidates or when you give money from your own campaign fund. You know, it used to be years ago that if you left Congress, you could just keep the money that you had in your campaign chest. I mean, just keep it personally, and they changed that. Oh, I think it was more than 10 years ago. It was a while ago. So he can't do that anymore. But I think he still can disperse the money to the candidates. The question is, what other candidate would take that money now? I mean, there's already a call to, you know, on people to return the campaign money that they got from Foley. And, you know, for example, I think Heather Wilson has already said that she's going to donate it to charity. So, boy, I don't know who'd take his money at this point.
Kind of red hot money, right?
Yeah.
Let me get Fred from Jenkintown to join us. Hi, Fred. Go ahead. Radio Times.
Yes, since the guests go way back in Washington, I'm wondering if they want to comment on Vice President Cheney's power and also relating it to the Reagan administration, when I think some people characterize Reagan as a king with a series of prime ministers.
Do you want to talk about the power of the Vice President, A.B. Stoddard?
I think Vice President Cheney is just a really interesting figure because if you look at the moment we discovered that he would be Bush's choice, Vice President Cheney was chosen by Bush and his political intimates to lead a search for a candidate, and he chose himself. He recommended himself, and they all agreed. And because he joined Bush on the ticket, and it's been understood from day one that he would never want to be president himself. He's, of course, suffered heart problems and, while he's been in office, well-publicized physical issues, and he's made a pledge that he didn't want to run. He enjoyed a particular he's really an island, and his influence is so unique because not only was he so respected by the world of George Bush, his political circle, because of his long work on the Hill and with the Ford administration, et cetera. I mean, he had a long, beefy resume that they respected. But once he said, my ego will not, impair you. I will not eclipse you as the vice president. I will only back you up. I will only bolster you up. He seemed to be given incredible leverage and latitude and license to make policy. And I think that Bob Woodward's book, and there's just been a long string of revelations about how much of Bush's ear Cheney has and how much freedom he has to make decisions. And I think it's been, I'm not a vice presidential historian. I think it's been very unique, though. And I think it will be very interesting to watch Republican or Democrat, the next president, to see what the president does with the role of the vice president in terms of reining them in or letting them loose.
Any thoughts about Vice President Dick Cheney, Susan Milligan, before we get back to our callers?
Well, I just think he does have unusual power and authority for a vice president. I mean, all presidents come in and they say the vice president is going to be their partner and he's not just going to be the guy waiting around and, cutting ribbons and going to funerals, and then it doesn't really turn out that way. Mm-hmm. But in this case, Vice President Cheney has certainly had extraordinary authority, and he's the point guy with the Hill as well. He comes to the Capitol Hill all the time and talks to the Republicans and rallies the base up there and lobbies on votes. So, you have to remember, too, that when the Senate was even more closely divided at one point when it was 50-50, I mean, he was critical up there because he was a tie-breaking vote.
But you think he has his power because of Bush's style of the presidency and, frankly, Bush's lack of experience?
Well, I mean, I think that's the role that President Bush wants him in. I mean, the president has always had the sort of CEO approach to his job anyway, where he was going to kind of be, the leader, but, delegate things to other people. And he certainly seems to have delegated a lot to Vice President Cheney, but he's also a pretty strong personality himself. I mean, I think some of it is a function of just who Dick Cheney is.
Let me get to Jamie from Fredericksburg, Virginia, to join us. Hi, Jamie. Go ahead, your Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking the call.
You're very welcome.
One of the things that amazes me, I'm a hardcore Democrat, believe that anybody could in America can grow up to be president. I just never thought it would happen. But in any event, what bothers me the most is that the Democrats are given this low-hanging fruit of incident after incident, and they don't seem to be stepping up to the plate to take the leadership position. If the most important thing are the soccer moms and the security moms looking to protect their families, the Republicans have proven that we have, for a ridiculous war, sent our children to die. We have now proven that we can't protect them if we entrust our children to members of Congress in Washington. And also, we're putting debt on our children for generations to come. And I'm just wondering what it's going to take to get the Democrats to finally step up and say, have you had enough?
Well, it's interesting, Jamie. I appreciate you calling into Radio Times, and I'll start with you, A.B. Stoddard, because he's not the first Democrat to call into this program to complain about the Democratic Party.
It's a very interesting moment for the Democrats because they've been just pining. First of all, they spent years smarting after 1994. I mean, it was totally bewildering for them to lose power after 40 years, as you can imagine. And for them, this year is they really know that if the voters don't buy what they're selling this time, they might never. I mean, this is really, really a pivotal moment for them. At the same time, what we've seen them do this year is make the calculation that they're going to step back, that the fall of the Republican Party is enough to propel them into office. And it just might be. Mm-hmm. It just might be after this Foley event. it might have just been before the full event, but it just might be now. I mean, we're looking at polls dropping. Hastert's district is in trouble, possibly. Foley's seat, Reynolds' seat, DeLay's seat, Ney's seat. I mean, we're just looking all around at things just popping off. I really think the numbers are in serious trouble for the Republicans. The Democrats, therefore, might take power in a few weeks after 12 years over the Republicans' failures. And they made a calculation to do that. They made a calculation to complain about Iraq, but not unite behind a withdrawal or deployment, a specific plan. They made the calculation to dodge certain political questions. Would you reinstate all the taxes that Bush has cut, et cetera? And they and this is going to be tricky for them because they just might win, but what will happen to them as a party, a traditionally very splintered party of lots of competing interests, far less homogenous than the Republican Party, what will happen to them is it will be so challenging for them to lead because they'll look around at each other in a few weeks should they win, and they'll say, we won because of this. No, we won because of that. No, I think we won because of this. But they won't know. And that will make it really hard to move forward.
Let me ask you, Susan Milligan, about the relationship between Bill Clinton and George Herbert Walker Bush. They were both in town last night for the Liberty Medal, which was given to both of them for their work on Hurricane Katrina. What do you make of this relationship?
Well, look, I mean, Clinton, especially after his heart surgery, he was one of the first to say that he sort of, you know, matured, for want of a better word, and, you know, put aside a lot of these sort of old political, you know, fights and so forth. And he's worked with the former president on, you know, tsunami aid and so forth, and I think that got, you know, quite close to that. Plus, Clinton is one of those people to whom, you know, personal, and actually George W. Bush the same way, to whom personal relationships can eclipse, you know, political differences. So I think what's going on there. I did want to address the other caller when he talked about the Democrats, you know, something. You have to remember a lot of it had to do with 9/11, and after 9/11, the Democrats are so shell-shocked. I mean, and then you had Dick Gephardt standing next to Bush in the Rose Garden announcing the language of the Iraq resolution. I mean, they were so afraid to take the Republicans on. They can do with security. But I think it's probably a better strategy for them now not to sort of come up with all sorts of alternative plans, because the more they make it an issue of this is our plan, this is their plan, the more of a chance Republicans have. The more they make it a matter of just a referendum on Republican rule, the better chance they have of taking back the majority. I mean, basically, you know, they're saying the Republicans spilled grape juice on the beige carpet, and the Republicans are saying, well, they can't agree on whether to get it out with club soda or white vinegar. Well, it doesn't matter if they're saying, you know, if they keep it to the issue of Republicans spilled grape juice on the beige carpet, throw them out, then I think they got a better shot at taking back the majority.
But you've also got Democrats like Jamie who are frustrated because his party won't take a position that he wants to hear, even if it's, you know, politically dangerous to do that.
Well, I mean, you know, a lot of people can't agree on how to get out of Iraq. I'm not sure that's the issue here. I mean, I think it has to do with just whether they want to continue on the path of staying in Iraq or getting out. I mean, the difference really seems to be, do we get out immediately? Do we phase out? Do we do this? Do we do that? I mean, but I think that the Democrats, from a political perspective, are better off making this election a referendum on the Republicans rather than, you know, trying to sort of say how they do things differently.
Jamie, thanks for the call. Let me get Greg from Westchester to join us. Hi, Greg. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. I would like to ask the guests about their opinion of on the night of Friday evening last week when Foley stepped down in the House. Bill Frist over in the Senate attached a bill as a rider to the Port Securities Act, and the bill purportedly would prohibit online gaming, even though a recent telephone survey of 1,000 adults showed that 70% did not want the legislature to interfere with online gaming. I'm just curious, you know, why and how, you know, something gets hidden in a larger act like that and will probably be signed into law, even though it never came to the light of debate on the Senate floor.
And, Greg, are you one of those 70% that wants to gamble online?
Sure.
Amy Stoddard, do you know what?
I don't know the particulars of this in terms of, you know, who was pushing that piece of legislation. I'm sorry to inform the caller that this is the way it works on Capitol Hill. They have great latitude to legislate at the last minute in terms of the way that, you know, the process allows things to be attached without committee consideration and without a lot of public notice. So that's gone on since the dawn of time, and it continues to be allowed. The practice of MIVET might have increased recently, but that's legal up there, and it happens all the time, and it always happens right before they leave for a campaign recess.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. Greg, thanks for the question. Susan Milligan, let me raise another race, which we haven't really talked about, which mm-hmm. is the New Jersey Senate race between mm-hmm. Bob Menendez and Tom Kane Jr. Why is Menendez having such trouble in a Democratic state, largely Democratic state?
Well, I mean, it's a Democratic state, but they've also, you know, elected their share of Republicans, and we have a tendency to just sort of label a state Democratic or Republican. He's in trouble. You know, he's only been in the Senate. He was never elected to the Senate, for one thing, so he never, you know, built statewide support to begin with. Kane is the son of a popular former governor who was on the 9/11 commission, and there, people have raised some sort of ethical questions about Menendez. This is a very tight race. I mean, it's the Republicans' best chance of picking up any Senate seat this year. I think that's about the only one they could pick up.
And a final question to you, A.B. Stoddard. We're, 6 years into a two-term presidency. Does this often happen with presidencies, especially into the second term, about 2 years into the second term? They either run out of gas or get into trouble or somehow become, you know, sidelined by other issues or by the Congress?
That's an interesting question. It is, to my knowledge, it is sort of a tradition that if you have 8 years, 6 years in, everybody's tired and they start taking their eye off the ball. And there were lots of examples of that this winter, the Dubai ports situation that blew up at the beginning of the year was the finest example of that. And there, after that, there was a lot of criticism. Rove is focused on his, you know, legal jeopardy. At that time, he was embroiled in the CIA leak case, had not yet been exonerated. And, you know, the vice president shot somebody and they sort of handled it wrong. And there was all these things happening. And it was, and they were examples of the White House just being burnt out. What's interesting about this moment is that Dennis Hastert could possibly lose and his political career because of this Mark Foley thing, purely because he was asleep at the switch. And when you're in power a long time, as Susan mentioned before, this just happens. Whether you get cocky or arrogant or you just get tired, something happens, and that's what's happened to the Republican, to the Bush administration, and that's what's happened to the Republicans on Capitol Hill. Surely a focused, agile political operation for shrewd political purposes only, even if they didn't want to think about children, would have said, Mark Foley is out of here. Mm. We're going to find a way to get him gone. We don't need this liability. And they didn't. Dennis Hastert.
You know, I got to stop you there only because the clock is ticking down and we are out of time. My thanks to both of you, A.B. Stoddard and Susan Milligan, for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Susan Milligan, national political correspondent in the Washington Bureau of the Boston Globe. A.B. Stoddard, associate editor for The Hill newspaper. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times and find out more about the program. We appreciate your phone calls to the program. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. You're listening to WHYY. FM Philadelphia, your member-supported news and information station serving Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Acura, featuring the all-new turbocharged Acura RDX with super handling all-wheel drive. More at Acura.com/RDX. Support for this public radio podcast comes from Acura, featuring the all-new turbocharged Acura RDX with super handling all-wheel drive. More at Acura.com/RDX.